Okay, we are on sheet 51. And I'd like to talk to you about Pesach Halacha. I gave out the English sheet, that was a mistake. I should have given to you after the class, because a lot of you spent the time reading the English sheet. But that's not bad, because the English thing has some important information on it. But I want to take you through a few issues and make sure you've got the nuances. This is, some of these sources were difficult. I want to make sure that you really grasp them. First of all, we talk about Pesach. A Pesach is not the same as an answer to a Shaila. Meaning, there are different kinds of interactions you can have with a Rav. We'll see that explicitly later on. Sometimes your interaction is one of learning, teaching. That's not a Pesach. You're learning ideas, you're learning halacha. There's no concepts of Pesach there. You could be going for advice eitza, in whatever area of life, in areas of religion, areas just generally of life, if your Rav is someone who you feel can help you. That's nothing to do with Pesach either. In all of these areas, there's no concept that once I ask somebody, I can't ask somebody else. No concept. Even in halachic questions, forget about advice, eitza, or just learning, but halachic questions, we'll see right now that most of the questions that we ask on a daily basis, I would have thought that certainly that you ask on a daily basis, many of those questions are not really Pesach either. They're just questions you don't yet know the answers to, because you haven't yet learnt as much as the people that you ask those questions to. But if it's a standard question that really doesn't have a lot of complexity behind it, it's just that you don't know the answer, you don't need to go to a posik to answer that question. You just need to go to somebody who has the knowledge to answer that question. And we'll see that right now. Number one, two halachas from Shulchan Aruch on what is Pesach. Loi mikra hara ela b'shemoira al ma'aseh shebalafana. First of all, Pesach has to be on a specific issue. It can't be hypothetical. A hypothetical discussion about what would one do in these situations is not Pesach. It has to be on a ma'aseh. You come to someone and they rule on this situation. What can I do about this? Is this kosher? Is this not? Aval im shalu the Talmud, if you went to a Talmud, meaning not a posik, you went to a Talmud, and you said, halacha kedivrei mi, in this situation, what is the halacha like? Do we follow this one or that one? The Talmud can answer that. He doesn't turn around and say, I'm not allowed to tell you, because it says, I'm not a posik. It doesn't have to be a posik. Yochel loyma mashe b'dasa, he can say whatever his opinion is. He's not paskening for you. Kevin she'enu moral ma'ata shebalafanov, he's not answering on a specific issue. Says the shach, avali moral ma'ata shebalafanov, but if he is really, I mean, you can't play games, says the shach. If he is really answering a specific question, even if, afilu shalo halacha kedivrei mi, even if you only ask, who's the halacha like in this scenario, if everybody knows that it's a real scenario, then he's the asa loyma kedivrei plaini. Meaning you can't dress up a real shaila as a non-shaila. If I were to ask you who the halacha were to follow, you know, if you don't want to ask a shaila, say, I'm not asking a shaila, I'm just interested in learning this sugya, and you'll get more knowledge, and you'll ask a shaila. But if you ask a shaila in a kind of backwards way, which is really a shaila, so then that is a shaila. But clearly from here, if it's a hypothetical question, it's not binding, the answer is not binding, and there has to be a specific issue, yes.
Like if you're dressing it up because you're scared of the answer?
Right, like, you know, I have a friend who has a, you know, although I get those shilas sometimes as well, you know, I know who your friend is. So you have to be careful about that. Number two, and this is perhaps more relevant, I'd say 90% of the questions you ask are not really Pesach at all. Look at number two. Loi mikra hoira ela b'davar sheyesh bo chiddush l'shoil. There has to be some elements of chiddush in halacha. Complexity, things which are difficult, which are not standard. Aval b'hoira yudua, but a well-known Pesach, hoira and Pesach are the same thing, effectively, for these purposes. A well-known Pesach, sheyipshuta l'kol, which is well-known to everybody. Now, well, to everybody. Of course, there are always people who are amaratzim, or people who haven't learned yet. Nothing's well known to a four-year-old. But things that people, informed people, should know about, kagoin, for example, noisin tam lifkam. What's noisin tam lifkam? I just, by mistake, used my fleshik pan. I didn't use it for a week already, and I used it to cook, milk. What's the story? Is the milk kosher? Is the milk not kosher? Like, you should know the answer to that question. You should. I mean, this is a standard child. It comes up 100 times a week, you know? Not in the same home, hopefully. But it comes up a lot. That's a standard question. Or a battle is of a shishim. If you don't know that if you drop a tiny amount of milk in your chicken soup, It's a big pot of chicken soup and a tiny bit. Can I still eat the chicken soup, Rabbi? That's not a snack. Any more than, let me give you a contemporary example. You go to someone and say, how do I make a cup of tea on Shabbos? So what you have to ask a poetic that question. So you'd ask a friend. They'll say, oh yeah, you use a klishlishi, you use a klisheni, this and the other, coffee, tea, whatever. Does that mean that you're a poetic now that people are coming to ask you shilas? The answer is absolutely not, because they're not shilas. They are shilas, they're questions, but they're not psak. So before we get into the question next time of like women poiskim, so if we're talking about the kind of questions which are not even psak, so there's not even a question about women poiskim, because you're not giving psak. You don't need to be a poetic to do that, you just need to know what you're talking about. I say to you that almost all of the teachers that you ever come across in school, none of us are poiskim in the sense of poiskim. None of us deal with unusual, mechudash questions, complicated new halachic areas, or if we do get asked them, what do? We ask our poiskim, okay? 90% of the things that you ask us, and I think I can include almost every other teacher in the school, if not every other teacher, even teachers who take more of a psak role, they're not really psak. They're questions that one day you'll also hopefully be able to answer on your own, but you're just asking for guidance. And as I say, occasionally, I've had shilas that have been like, I once had a girl in a shir. We were talking about something hypothetically about kiddushin. I don't know, it was a shir about. She suddenly went white as a sheet. I could see her, like, you know, going green in the shir. She came up to me afterwards and she said, I think I may be actually halakhically married to somebody. And this person now lives at the other side of the world and they're not religious and they're never going to give me a get. And like, you know, she could see her entire life crumbling in front of her. And she had a deeply complicated situation, which I'm certainly not going to get into right now. If you want to ask me afterwards, I'll tell you what it was. But and I went to a Pisic. This girl didn't sleep for about, like, I don't know, 3 nights. And I went to a Pisic and he came back and that was a stack of stuff. I had a girl once sitting in a shir in another seminary. She was sitting right there. She was sitting right there. She wasn't married halakhically. She was not even questioned about marrying, but she. I had a girl sitting right there where Chaya is sitting, a long time ago, I can imagine it. And she turned round to me and said, I have a friend who got married 2 weeks ago, and the marriage collapsed after a week. He threw her out of the house, and she didn't like him, and now she wants to know if she has to cover her hair or not. Like, that's not a kind of standard question that you could just look up in Shulchan Aruch. It depends on loads of different issues. And I was on the phone to the father of the Kalah and the this one and the that one and asking my poskim. Those kind of questions we take to poskim. Having said which, you'd be surprised sometimes an apparently straightforward question is actually very complicated and you didn't realize it, and I've fallen foul of this. Let me give you an example. I once did a barbecue in the summer. I remember this very distinctly. It's about 20 years ago. I did a barbecue in the summer and we went through a phase in the Manning home where we liked barbecued bananas.
Yeah, that was so good.
Bananas, if you insist. At the end of the meal, you put them on with the skins on, and they kind of go to the expand, and they're really good. They're really good. At the end of a meat meal, really good, really good. So what I did is we had our beef burgers and things like that, and we had a great, you know, it was the one sunny day in the British summer, when it, whichever year it was, and at the end, I probably barbecued in the rain, you know, and then I put the bananas on, and then I sliced them open, and my wife came out to me, and she said, please tell me you didn't use my best pair of cutting knife to slice those bananas. Please tell me that. And I'm kind of holding it. You know, I said, could it be your best blade cutting knife? Now she goes, I need a pair of cutting knife, and this is the knife. So she said, take it and ask for Shiloh. So I went after the barbecue to one of the Dayanim in London who had a keshu, and I went to Dav Mincha in his shul. And I said to him, I came up to him and I said to him, look, you know, I've got this knife and I flay-shicked it up and I, because it was like meat fat bubbling all around the bananas and I was a hot figure. So I said, I think I made it flay-shick and I'm pretty sure, but like, can you just, tell me if there's any way, like, anyway, he, very patient, he said to me, like, tell me exactly what happened, where did you cut it and what is this and what is that. And at the end he said to me, the knife is paired. I said, oh, great. And he said, and by the way, when you come to ask a poetic a question, you don't tell them what you think the answer is, and can they just confirm that you're right? You give me the facts, and I give you the psak. He said that was one of the most complicated shilas You have to know five different areas of Yoredea very expertly to know how to pass in that Shaila. So next time you ask the Shaila, you ask it the right way. He gave me a whole Musa. Those were the days when you give people Musa and they didn't collapse and go on to therapy afterwards. You know? They say, you know, I remember it to this day. And so sometimes a simple shayla like slicing open a sizzling banana can actually be very complicated. So don't be too quick to think it's a straightforward question, which is one of the reasons why a lot of people ask a lot of people questions, because you never know when it's. But sometimes you do know. And making tea with a cliche dish on Shabbos is really not complicated. You can look it up in any book. So things which are standard halachic issues are not an issue of sack. That you don't need to play sick for that. Therefore, you ask your teachers, and we're happy to answer you. And you answer yourselves if you could do it. Yes.
What about in cases where, like, there are two different opinions? It's like, let's say with the tea thing, like, some people won't make sure the tea so she will only use tea scents.
Right.
Is that just a chumrah thing? Or is that
no, it depends on how you learn the sugya, and depends on whether you hold by kli shlishi or not by kli shlishi, etc. But that's also not an issue of psak. It's well known that there are two shittas. There's this shita and there's that shita. And if you were to ask someone how to make a cup of tea on Shabbos, they would probably tell you, look, my Rav says to do it this way, and this is what I follow. That's also not psak. Not psak. Really, it's nothing complicated about it. It's a standard halachic shaila which there are different opinions, and this is this opinion, this is that opinion. Now, if you don't know which opinions to follow, then maybe you need to ask a poisek, but then the question you're asking the poisek is not, how do you make a cup of tea on Shabbos? It's, how do I choose between different opinions when there are different... That's a more complicated question, which is maybe is a question for a poisek. Now, on that issue, although it's not in order on the sheet, although I may change the sheet afterwards, so if you're listening on the internet, it may now be in order on the sheet. So if you go to the top of page 4, where I put picking a poisek, I took this from Rabbi Katz's, bless you, Teremisinai, bless you, Teremisinai course, because he has a whole series of things that he sets out there, and I like the way he did it, so I certainly accredit him, and I agree with everything he put here. He has one extra one which I didn't necessarily understand, and I didn't include it, but I'll ask you about it afterwards, and I'll ask him about it afterwards as well. But I think these are important things to know. Number one, there is an absolute requirement to have a posik. Actually, you know something, maybe we'll learn this better after we forget that for a second. Let's just do 3 through 8, and then we'll come back to this. I changed my mind. I don't mean to have you flicking around, but this will actually make it more make more sense to you. Are you all right, Natalia?
I'm fine. I don't know
about that. Right. Where do we find the concept of asking a shayla? So it's interesting. You find it in the Chumash itself as a bedieved, as a bedieved. Number 3, ki yipale mimcha davar. If meaning it shouldn't happen, but if it happens that you're not clear on something, Beidam Ladam, in areas of blood, it could be murder, it could be Bechus Nidah, it could be any number of things, Kashrus, Bein Din Ladin, in matters of monetary law, Bein Nega Lanega, in matters of ritual law, Nega literally is Saraf, okay? Divrei Ribas Misharecha, and there's an argument in your town, V'kamta, you must get up, V'alisa El HaMakom, you will go to the place, Asher Yivcha Hashem Elokecha, boy. Those words are important. You'll go to the shofet which is in your days. Now, which other shofet can you go to? I can't go to the judges from 500 years ago, and I can't go to the shofets from 500 years from now. So why does it include the words you'll go to the judges in your day? What did you get out of this? There has to be a context, meaning there has to be someone who connects with you. You will ask with the Rashta, and he'll tell you what to do. So you see, the whole concept of a shayla is built into the Chumash, but it's a bedieved. What's the lechatchila? Why aren't you Talmid Chacham of world proportions? Why aren't I a Talmid Chacham of world proportions? Good shayla. Good shayla. I don't know the answer to that question, other than, you know, I'm not trying hard enough. Yeah, that's a question for a poisek, yeah. So, I can answer that question without being a poisek. The answer is I haven't put enough effort in, otherwise I would be. More, anyway, than I am now. So, there are always going to be situations where you have to ask other people, realistically, but in principle, it is a bedieved, and you really need to know. And in this modern day and age where you have access to so much in English, so much in, you know, on the net, etc., just in terms of reading the parsha, Like, should you really go into Shabbos any time for the rest of your lives without having at least reviewed the Parsha in English, some stage, during Shabbos or before? Is there any good reason why that can't happen? When you get to the Shabbos table and they say, well, what Parsha is it this week? You know, or someone says something, they go, really, that happens in the Parsha? Like, there shouldn't be any surprises anymore. It's been the same for 3,000 years. Yeah? Nothing new is happening in the Parsha. No, because I was thinking 13 BCE. Okay? I wasn't suggesting that. So I'm saying that you should read the Parsha. So in other words, there's no excuses, but we all find excuses. Have a look at number 4 and 5. Classic Pirkei Avos, parent sphere, but of course not. Yeshua ben Parachi, Oima Selecha Rav, Kne Lecha Chavra. First it says, get yourself a Rav, find yourself a friend. Number 5 it says, Rabban Gamliel, Oima Selecha Rav, Histalik Min HaSofek. Why does it say twice, get yourself a Rav? Once it says, get yourself a Rav and a friend. Then it says, get yourself a Rav and remove yourself from Sofek. And the classic answer was what? What did he say in the Meforshim? Well, that one's a mashpia, one is an idea of someone who can influence you, one is an idea of hashkofa, of advice, just like a friend will help you, so Rav will help you. That's the first one. Get yourself a Rav so you're plugged in to wise people who can guide you in life. Meaning, I'm not a chassid, so I don't have a Rebbe, meaning I don't go to someone and ask them how to do every single thing I do in my life. And my Rebbeim have all been very litvish, which means they follow a model which is I go to them for advice, and they say, I think this is what you should do, but of course you'll make up your own mind, and please do make up your own mind, don't just do what I say. That's the model of advice that my Rebbeim have always given me, and that's what I give to my students. And it's not psak, I'm talking about advice. That's a selecha rav. And you'd be foolish not to. Rabbis are often very thought-through people. They put a lot of time thinking, time into thinking about things that many other people have not bothered to sit and think about, apart from halacha. So it's often very sensible to bounce things off these people, but not necessarily. Not just because they have a smicha, but because they are people that's worth asking. That's a selecha rav. But the second one is shilat and psak. Let's look at number 6. Zer shetziva kam basias rav. Later, when it says the Rambam, get yourself a rav. His ein hula inyan halimud is not to learn from. But of course, get yourself a rav is not just eitzah, but it's limud as well. But this one is not even limud. Ela hayra halacha, it's halacha. But Rami says, aselecha ish le rav. Get yourself a person as a rav. Kidei shetismuch alav b'mutav asa tistarech achad ata minha sveikas. Having doubts in life is very unsettling. Being clarifying Sophic is very rewarding, and therefore getting a Rav who can give you a feeling of clarity. Don't get a Rav who leaves you feeling confused. Get a teacher who leaves you feeling confused. Because sometimes that just means you need to think about it more. Meaning, I don't have a problem if you leave my class sometimes feeling this is much more confusing than I thought it was. Hopefully you mean it's complex, not just that I confused you. But in terms of psak, people often say to me it's so confusing, but actually they don't mean that, they mean it's so complex. And I don't mind that. In terms of a rav, it's a disaster. You don't want to come away from a rav thinking, like what is all this about? Like, what do I do now? You have to have clarity. Clarity is very... Sometimes you end up with shilas where, you know, you know that the rav didn't really understand you properly, or he was... Also, this is a very important point. When you're asking a shila, the rav has to kind of have his head in it. Meaning, you can't ask someone just as they're getting into the car, or they're walking out of the shul and they're on one leg, and you ask them some... You know, we had a shila once about my son, who was born using forceps delivery. I hope you won't mind me telling you this. He's now 20, so he's got over it. But he was born using forceps. And forceps, I'm not getting into the graphic detail, but basically sometimes babies need a little bit of encouragement to leave. It's nice and warm and cuddly inside. And sometimes they need more than encouragement. They need to be sort of grabbed and pulled out. Okay? And in the case of first babies, it's often harder than subsequent babies. And our first child was born with the aid of a little bit of pulling and tugging. And then we had a shaila about Pidyon HaBen. Because he was due to have a Pidyon HaBen, but there's a lot of reasons that you don't have a Pidyon HaBen, and there was no reason for him not to have a Pidyon HaBen other than the fact that his delivery was by means of forceps around the head and sort of pulled him out. So does that count as a Peter Rechem? Meaning, did he come out in contact with the womb, or is that now something that now will not allow him, or will at least I won't be able to make a bracha on the Pidyon HaBen? And of course, if I have a Pidyon HaBen and everyone says, oh, that's interesting, why didn't you make a bracha? So I'm going to say, well, yeah, actually, you know, here are, you know, pictures of, you know, how procedures. So that's not happening. So I asked. I made the mistake of asking a senior rabbi as he was kind of running out of the room after the bris. The bris we did do. There was no problem with that. And he kind of said, don't make a bracha. He said, don't make a bracha. But it was a kind of a question asked as someone was leaving, but he was kind of more like a best off, you know, best off not make a bracha. I don't think he'd really thought all the implications of me not making a bracha at a public opinion event, etc. So then I went to ask another Rav a question, which is like more settled, and said, look, you know, what is going on with this anyway? I went to ask my regular Rav, and we had a proper conversation, and he went into the proper facts and the details and the whole thing. And then I had a secondary Shaila, which is, well, have I already asked the Shaila to the first rabbi, and what if he's there at the Pidyon Aben, and what if I make a bracha, and will it be an insult to him? So I had a kind of double... But the thing happened because I didn't ask the Shaila properly. I grabbed someone as they were kind of leaving, and I said, oh, what about this, what about that? Sometimes, you know, when I walk out of class and people ask me, oh, I have a question, and it's okay when it comes to questions, but when it comes to Pesach, you can't ask that like that. Yeah.
Well, that's
right, because
it would be that always jumping from question to question.
So if you feel that he's just not able to focus on your questions, get a different postkin. So postkin is so busy, you just can't get hold of them. They're brilliant postkin, but for you, they're useless. Because if you can't get hold of someone, you can't hold of... Sometimes you can get hold of people who can get hold of people. And I'll tell you this for something. The Jewish system of Pesach is brilliant in the sense that if you really need somebody, they will get you there. If you really need to speak to Rav Chaim Kanievsky today, we'll have you in his office this afternoon, if you really need it. You know? Because everyone knows that I had this... my cousin had this Shaila. This is really interesting. My wife's cousins come from Klanhor, a big family. There are 10 children. And what happened is... Two of the girls married two brothers from another family. One married one brother, and then the younger sister married the younger brother of the other one. Very nice. Now, there are shailas about whether siblings should marry siblings, not because of halacha, but there are Kabbalistic issues. There's the tzavor of Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid. Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid was one of the leading Kabbalists in the Ashkenazi world in the Middle Ages, in the like 12th century, 13th century. And he writes that siblings shouldn't marry siblings. But that's not halachically binding unless there's a minhag to follow that. And the minhag of Klal Yisrael is that we're not makpid on that. And therefore siblings do marry siblings. You probably know siblings who marry siblings. You know any siblings marry siblings? It's something that people do. Even though Rabbi Yehuda HaChosid says not to do it, the minhag is that that's not a halachic source in this sense. Now, what happened in my cousin's family is you had girl-girl married to boy-boy. So the youngest brother of the two girls wanted to marry the youngest sister of the two boys.
Oh, yeah.
And they've seen each other at about five chasnas, you know. and this was therefore a third who wanted to marry again. And everyone was very like, where'd you look this up? Are we three marrying, whatever. And eventually they got this Shaila into Rav Eliashiv. And he was the only... They actually went to Rav Chaim Kanievsky. And he said, I don't know. I have to ask my father-in-law. You know, when you go to Rav Chaim Kanievsky and he says, I don't know. You know? then you hit a great Shaila. You know? I don't know if he said, I don't know. He said, I won't pass on this. He went to Rav Eliashiv. And they got the Chosen into Rav Eliashiv. This is Rav Eliashiv only a few years ago. So like the peak of his... Like, and they got this little slip of a bocher in, like, sitting there with Rav Eliashiv. Okay, fine. Rav Eliashiv is there to answer shaylas of this nature. And the answer was, he said he can, and he did, and he does, and Baruch Hashem. He wasn't so straightforward, by the way. He asked a lot of questions, like, are your older siblings happy? Did they have a stable marriage? Did they have children? You know, and is everything going well? He asked all sorts of questions, which I don't really understand how the questions work, but it was not so posh. But they did it, and they got upset. Yes.
Does it matter? Like, does it make a difference if it's two brothers marrying two sisters?
I'll go and ask Rav Kanievsky. I don't know.
So
let's go on a second. One second. So asking a postic is essential to remove sophic, and you have to have clarity. But there's one thing which I want to also stress. Okay, number seven. You shouldn't make yourself into someone who decides your halachas. You and I are not capable of paskening real psak because we don't know enough. And if you think you know enough, then you're really living in a dream world, okay? As I said at the beginning of the year, at least by the end of this year, you should know what you don't know. You should know enough how much you don't know to be able to realize that other people know more. I'm talking about poskim. But I'm in the best. You shouldn't be so confident. Ella came and the love the feirushu. If it's not something which is clear, iboile le mezol kamirava. You have to go to a rab. But if it is something which is clear, and this is a secondary point, which is brought out by the base of Achira as well, he says be mine. That I've underlined landing number 8. Be mashe enuk suva behedi, things which are not written explicitly, but Talmud, the historical hoitzim in a svara, and you need a poisik to work it out from svara, or be miktas rias or chokas, or from different proofs, then you need to go to a poisik. But, and this is a point which I want to make to you, you need to take responsibility for your own basic halachic knowledge. Which is, yes, you must always go to a poisik in something which is complex, but things which are straightforward, why are you still asking a poisik? Or anybody? Why aren't you taking responsibility for knowing the halacha? Basic halakhic shilas, you should not need to go to a poisek. If you don't know it, then you better. Or at least to someone who knows what they're doing. But why don't you know it? Like, can you imagine like someone who after keeping Shabbos for like 8 years, still doesn't know how to make a cup of tea on Shabbos? Like, why not? What's wrong with you? And the same is true of like standard cash for shilas that come up. How many times are you going to call a poisek when you drop your milking spoon in the place of washing up? And when are you actually going to learn what the halakh is? Okay, certain times the situation is slightly different and it makes a difference, like the banana situation. But you've got to take responsibility to really knowing halacha. There's no excuse. You can read books on the Kitzes Forum and the English Forum in basic halachic areas.
But you can't make tzak for yourself. So I'm saying,
If you don't know what bracha to make on a peanut, it's because you never checked it out. Why are you picking up the phone and bothering a rav? Asking what bracha to make on a peanut. Okay, if you're 6 years old, there's the cute story of the kid who goes to Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach when Shlomo Zalman was a Gadol Hadorim sack, and he had people lining up, and this kid comes up to and it's like 6 year old, and he comes up to him, and he's in the line, and Rosh Shlomo Zalman looks down, he goes, yes, and he says, you know, do I have to make a bracha on a piece of gum? So Rav Shlomo Zalman, he usually gave people like, he was usually yes, no, yes, no. Yeah, he was like this kid, he said, oh, so that makes it Shaila. And he brings him in and he starts pulling out Sforim. He says, look, it's here, and there's here, and there's a spartatic, and there's a chloik, and so interesting. And the kid's like, ah, you know. Unbelievable. And I was like, yes, you have to make a charcoal, you know, there's no taste. So, but I'm saying that he's a six-year-old, and he's giving him basically a chinuch experience. But if you're still asking this question when you're 20, like, what's wrong with you? Why are you still asking that? You know if you have to make a broch on a piece of gum? You never asked that? You never checked that out? Yes.
How do you know if it's more complicated than you think it is?
That's a problem, but usually you have to develop a sense for that. And it takes a little bit of time. And like me with the banana, I didn't have that sense for that. But often you know. But I'm not saying you should go away and answer all your own halakhic questions. I'm absolutely not saying that. But I'm saying you need to gain the knowledge to be able to have confidence. And my rabbonim also encouraged me, before when I was the balabos in London, and I wasn't in any sense someone who was doing this all day long, my poskim encouraged me that when I'm asking a shaila a lot, to take responsibility for that. It's myself, yes.
Then where do you go when you know you probably should know something and you just don't?
When you know it's a straightforward shiloh, you go to somebody who is more knowledgeable than you, and you ask them, and they'll tell you. If you're really honest, you should go to someone who will also give you musa to learn more, mm-hmm. and then you'll learn more. Okay, let's go on a little bit. But that's an important point. Now look at the list that I gave you about finding a posting. So let's go through these very quickly. Number one, it's an absolute requirement. Well, we're not going to get through the sheets today, are we? You can't work everything out for yourself. We talked about that. You have to have some responsibility for yourself. Here, you have to go to a poisik in your day, meaning with some context that knows you. It doesn't matter for standard questions. Let's say you don't know what happens when you drop your fleshik spoon in your milchik washing up. It doesn't matter who you ask. You can pick a rab out of, you know, yellow pages and just say, hi, I couldn't get hold of anyone else. What do I do? Okay, fine. That's no problem. Exactly. You know, ask Moses. Don't rely on ask Moses, okay? There are SMS shadow lines. Rav Aviner in Israel, in Hebrew, obviously, Rav Aviner is quite a senior person. In many ways, he has an SMS shalom. Like my kids have SMS in shalom very often. And you just ask him a shalom, and he usually answers one word, like yes, no, or why are you asking this, or of course, or however, obviously, these are not really shilas for the reasons that we've just said. These are just stuff that people should know, but they don't know. When real shilas come up, like, I've had 3 babies in the last 4 years, and I really feel that I don't want to get pregnant again for a while because it's kind of going to wreck my life and the family, and my husband's kind of killing it. You know, that kind of question, complex birth control questions and things like that, things of that nature, you can't pull out a rap from Yellow Pages. You can't just dial, you know, SMS, like, had babies, lots, you know, need break, birth control, ?? You know, that's
I would love you a couple of questions.
That's not how it works. So her father probably deals. Actually, the father probably deals with these kind of texts sometimes. But that's a real stack issue. But that needs somebody who knows you very well. They have to understand the pressures and stresses on your life. They have to understand where your career fits into your general hashkafic framework. How important it is that you keep your job as a lawyer going and not have another 3 babies or whether etc. And therefore, obviously, these questions have to be asked to someone you have a relationship with. You have to have a relationship. Next is they have to be someone who helps you raise your game, raising your level in motivation, application, observance, quote-unquote spirituality. That's bringing your reality closer to your ideal. Having multiple rabbis is legitimate. We'll qualify that in a minute by something we're going to learn now. Because different people have different areas of expertise. I've had shilas that have been asked. My wife had a very interesting shilas many, many years ago when we first married. She had a little operation on her finger, and she had some stitches in it. And it was nothing very complicated, but she had a mikveh shaila. Are you allowed to go to the mikveh with stitches? The poshut answer is no. And you ask most poskim, and the answer will be no. You can't have chatzitzas. They were quite big stitches. And we went to our regular rav, and he said, you know something? I'm not able to give you a heter on this. My masorah says no on this. And so will most people. But if you ring Dayan so-and-so, he has an expertise on these areas. Not that he said, if you ring down so-and-so, he'll say yes. No, it wasn't it at all. It was, if you ring down so-and-so, I have no idea what he'll say. But he is an absolute expert on mikveh shilas. That's great. That's perfect. That's absolutely fine. We rang down so-and-so. He was on the telephone. He was somewhere in a hotel. This was before mobile phones. We got hold of him in the hotel lobby somewhere over. And he asked us any number of weird questions. Like, you know, get your wife to hold up a finger to the light and you know, does it look like this, does it look like that, and how, and rub it up and down, and does it feel like this, and does it feel like that. And after I came back to my rabbi and I said to him, these are the questions he asked me, he said, don't know what we're talking about, it's amazing, I'm interesting. In the end he said it was okay for this reason, that reason, but that was an area of expertise, there's nothing wrong, that's not called shopping around, that's not trying to find heterim, you're asking the person who has the best knowledge. I have certain questions in Choshen Mishpat, in monetary issues, I go to certain rabbonim, because I know they have expertise in these areas. I have certain questions which are more personal, hashgafic, I know that my own rabbi has the expertise because he knows where I'm coming from, etc. There's nothing wrong with having multiple rabbis. Yes.
So how do you build a relationship with all those different rabbis?
Well, sometimes the relationship is going to be stronger with some than others, but you ask them shyly, you get to know them. You try and go to visit them for Shabbos, if you can. Obviously, you're not going to go to Rav Kanievsky for Shabbos, maybe you can. I don't know. You're not going to have relationships with the top poskim, often. And therefore, they're not the people you should ask really personal shyness to. It's very interesting. But
you're only supposed to ask them serious questions. Then when you start asking them questions, they're serious questions and they don't know you to answer.
Well, some questions, this question about the 3 church children marrying each other is not, you don't really need a relationship, you just need to understand the situation. But you have to be a nudge, Dale. You really have to be a bit of a pain in the neck. I'll tell you, as a person who's very busy, who gets asked a lot of questions, the people who bother me most are the people who get the most attention. I'm sorry, it's just the way it is. And therefore, in a nice way, obviously, if you're complete, I had a guy who was stalking me. Until I'm serious. He's sending me emails. He's a very weird guy. He was sending me weird questions. And at first I was asking them, but then he's like sending me 3 emails a day about this and that, about weird stuff. And eventually I had to write to him and say to him, you know, I'm really sorry, I recommend you find someone more locally, but I'm not going to answer any of your emails ever again. And he didn't stop. He kept. I'm not talking about being like that. But people who are nice about it and know what they're doing, so that's something that you. Can I come to you for Shabbos? You know, I'm going to be in town. It would be great if I could. And usually, if you know, the answer will be yes, and you build a relationship. You have to make it happen. If wherever you're going back to, New York or whatever, it's they're going to be very busy people with very little time, and you're going to have to push yourselves a little bit into their lives. But that's fine. By the way, it's not going to happen tomorrow, and it's going to be in flux until you get married, because until you get married, you're not really going to have the stability to be able to develop a real ongoing relationship with a posik. Usually, not always, sometimes you come into a marriage with a posik. Sometimes, often the women have much more than the men, because they're the more halakhically connected, and the men are often in yeshiva, they just ask the Rosh Hashiva. By the way, the Rosh Hashiva is not the right person, often, to answer psak, because he's often not a posik either. You can have a Rosh Hashiva, a great renowned, who is outstanding in Londis, outstanding world leader, but you don't ask him complex shilas, because he just doesn't know. There's nothing wrong with that.
But can you ask him, and then he'll say, I don't know, and then he'll ask?
Well, you hope so, but if I were you, I would ask the people who are poskim, because poskim and Rosh Hashivas, so you could have a Rosh Hashiva who is a poskim. You have to know your people. Some people are, some people aren't. Rav Moshe Feinstein had a yeshiva, he was also a world poskim. Some Rosh Hashivas answer, and there are lots of situations got messed up big time. This with chuppas. All sorts of, it's very nerve-wracking running a chuppa. Because if everything goes well, it's the easiest thing in the world. You know, they've been running for 2,000 years like this. You know? But then something goes wrong. And you can so easily mess up somebody's life if you don't know what you're doing. You know, somebody, a little thing can go wrong, like somebody forgot to make one of the Sheva brachas. I was at a wedding recently where, you know, the same guy made the bracha twice and nobody knows it until they've finished. Okay? Alright, then what do you do? Okay, it's not going to be life. And situations I know of where, you know, they do the kiddushin, they make the brachas rather on the erusin, and they do beautiful, and they read the ksuba, and they say the Sheva brachas, and they lay the glass and the mazel tov, and they all wake up, and then someone says, did he give her the ring? now you've done the nisuin, but you didn't do the kiddushin, and they're already in the yichud room, and it's like, so you know. These things can, and often people who are like the Rosh Hashiva is the guy who is running the wedding, they're not always the right people who know, sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. But you need a proper, you know, posek that's doing that. Last couple of things. Husbands and wives don't need to have the same posek. As I said, a woman often brings the posek into the marriage with her. This is my posek, and here's who we're going to ask our shilas to. Most men actually for a quiet life will go along with that, frankly, because they usually don't have another serious contender. A lot of guys, they don't really usually have, sometimes they do something, they tend to speak to their rebbeim. It depends on the guy, it really depends on the guy. Because, like, I don't know, women, in my experience, women tend to be more focused on these things, and they're, you know, in seminaries where halacha is more stressed, the guy thought you can learn halacha. But they pick up, at least they need to ask shilas and what the shilas are, whereas the guys are just learning the next toast first. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but they don't tend to be in the mind frame to do that. And women also tend to be very much more practically focused as to, you know, let's just cut it down, we need to know what to do. 1 second, it'll go on. And it talks about a mentor. Now, a couple of other things, and we'll do a bit more on this next time, but I want you to go back to the sheet. Have a look at source number 9, please. Let's at least start this. This issue of actually asking a second opinion. Looking number 9. Hanisha l'chacham v'timei. If you ask a shayla to a rabbin, he says, Osa. Lo yisha l'chacham v'yitai. Says the basic position, the Gemara says, you shouldn't ask a second shayla to a rab for a different answer than he states mutter. L'chacham va'aser, if both in Tumah and Tara and also in Isser and Heter, you shouldn't ask a Rifa. Rav says aser lo yishal l'chacham v'yaser. You shouldn't ask a second question. That's the basic starting point. Similarly, on the Rav himself in number 10, v'atani chacham shetimei ein chaveru rishay l'tar. If one Rav says aser, another Rav is not allowed to overrule him and say mutter. For Tara Tumantara, and also if he says Asa, if he Asa did, Ein Chaveru Rishay LaHata, his colleague's not allowed to say Mutter. Meaning, both on the questioner in terms of asking the Shaila, and on the Rav in terms of giving up Sak, once you've asked the Shaila, then that's that. Okay? Now,
wait.
One second. Why is that the case? I haven't got time for questions. I'm just going to have 5 minutes, and then we'll see how far we get. Why is that the case? So there, in the postgame, in the Rishonim, they bring down three different reasons. Either, as I brought down in number 11 here, I should look at number 12 first. Look at what the Rif says here. Kasaf HaRaivad, this is the Ram rather, the Raivad writes like this in number 12. What is the reason you can't overrule the first Shaila? The Loinishim Kfoy the Shilrishim. It's not because of covered for the first Rav, the Nagaba, that you're offending the covered. Since the first Rav said Asa, he has created a reality of Issa. Meaning, classic case, you take a chicken. People don't take chickens to Rabbanim anymore, but chickens used to be, you know, you shech them and then they look and see they've got a broken limb. You say, oh, did I just, you know, break it on the way home? Or was it broken and therefore it's a traitor? So you take the chicken to a Rav and he looks at it and he goes, Asa. Says the Ram here, the Raivad brings down, that this is Shavya Chaticha de Isura. It has become a piece of Issa. The Rav has made that pronouncement. The thing itself now has a din, a reality, a reality in Halacha, and you may even say a spiritual reality, if you want to say that Halacha, it really reflects some spiritual world or whatever, however you want to see that, whether it's more Kabbalistic or just more din-oriented. That thing has a din that it's Issa. And you can't overturn that. How can you change that? You can't make it from, if it's pork, it's pork. I can't splash holy water on it and say, you're not pork anymore. Okay? So it's done, it's finished. But feel Hekei Rishaini, even if the second guy says it's okay, Eina Muteris, you can't make it okay. Can't change reality. I feel how God will be menu, even if the second rabbi is a great rabbi. You ask the first rabbi, he was a poisek, he was qualified. He knew what he was doing. And he said, Osa. You can take it to Rabbi Eliyashi if you can't say Mutter. He can't turn it from being something into which wasn't something which it was. Even if it's God of B'chacham Aminyan. And then the Ram says, but you know something? There are other approaches. And he brings two other approaches. The first approach, he says, is actually it may not be anything to do with Chaticha the Isura. It's not that he made it Osa. It's a covered issue. Meaning, if you ask somebody and they said it's Osa, it's not Mechubad to go to a second Rav to say to him, you know, what do you think? And he says, well, I disagree. Ha, and second Rav's going to overrule the first Rav. So, according to the Ram, the second reason brought down is not because of an intrinsic nature of Issa in the thing, but because the second Rav has no business overriding the covet of the first Rav. That's the second thing he says. And the third thing he says, and maybe it's not just about this, but maybe it's about a general issue, that we don't want the whole halachic process to look very confused. We don't want people to be asking different questions to different people, getting different answers. Now, how do we paskin? There are lots of practical implications to this. Think about this. This is the basic issue in halacha, guys. Is it that a psak creates a halachic reality? Or is it just an issue of you can't offend the first rabbi or make people confused in halacha? But really there is no intrinsic reality in the first psak. Give you a few nafka minutes. What if the second rabbi is greater than the first rabbi? So according to the view that it's intrinsically also, so that doesn't help. According to the other view, but it's not a problem for covered. If you ask me a shaila, let's say I was a poisek, which I'm not, but let's say you ask me a shaila, and then you say, then Rav Eliyashiv decides to overrule me, or Rav Kanievsky, it's a covered that he even was asked the same shaila, you know, so it's not a problem. What happens if you're being matir, for example? Let's say you ask the first Rav, and he says, it's fine. Mutter. Can you go to a second Rav for him to say, Asa? So again, if it's because of Chaticha de Isura, it becomes intrinsically something. Well, you didn't make intrinsically anything. So then it's okay. But if it's a covered issue, then it's now a problem. Because how can you offend the covered of the first one, even if it was Mutter? So it's still an issue of covered. Yeah.
Intrinsically
yeah, because the lashon is chaticha de isura. It's taken on a status of being now prohibited. It can't be a status of permitted. That's not an intrinsic status. Yeah, and therefore that's basically a major halachic debate. The bottom line is, it seems to be that the Rama rules like the issues of covered, that it's the covered issue which takes priority. But there's a lot more to say about this, and I haven't got time to say it now. But one thing, just to underline this right now, and maybe we'll talk about it a little bit the first time, the next year. In terms of you asking a shaila to a second rav, let's talk about this just for a minute. I know we've gone over time for a minute, but it's important. There is never a problem with you asking a Rav, a second Rav. Just look for a second at number 14, and I'll let you go. The Rama brings down, Chacham she'asa, ein chavei rishai lahati mishikul hadar. If you get a psak from a Rav, then he can't override the first Rav just because he disagrees with him. That's for sure. Aval im yesh lo kabbalah she'ta'a. But if the second Rav has a Kabbalah, has a received tradition, the first Rav just made a mistake, okay, he can overrule him. Or Shita B'Dvar Mishnah, or if the first Rav clearly made a mistake. I had this Shaila, I was asked a Shaila on something, and I was absolutely convinced that the Rav had made a mistake. Rabbonim are not infallible. And I went to another Rav and said, look, what's going on? He said, straight mistake. He showed me in Shulchan Aruch, he just forgot it. So there's no shy that a second Rav can absolutely overrule it. Yochel ha-hatzeh, he can overrule it. V'afilu im tam mishikul hadas, even if there was just a question of analysis, yochel lisa v'liteni mechamoyre, the second Rav could always call up the first Rav and discuss it. Actually, after he might change his mind. The Rav can change the mind. U'lechein, and therefore, and we'll finish with this point, which is important. Ein issa l'shoyel sheni. There's never an issa to ask another Rav the same question you asked the first Rav. As long as you inform the second Rav that you already asked the Shaila, and this is what you were told, and this is why you're asking again, and that could be because you felt that the first Rav made a mistake, or he didn't really understand you, or you didn't explain yourself properly, or the Rav was walking out of the house in a hurry, and etc., etc. And therefore, the second Rav will then take that into consideration. He may turn around and tell you and say to you, I'm sorry, I disagree with the first guy, but that's just shikul hadas, and you could argue it both ways, and I can't overrule him. He may turn around and say the first guy's just wrong. He may say my kabbalah is that this is how it is, and there are other things to say as well. Let me bring this up at the beginning of the. We're going to talk about women postgame next time, and I don't want to put that off. But let's just have a few more words at the beginning of the next year about asking a second shayla, so that we clarify. I don't want to rush that point, but that's really where we're heading for. Okay. Good. Thank you. Have a good day.